From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Chad Beter.
And I'm Steve Thomas.
Steve's back with us for one more week here. We are going to talk about AppV.
Yes, we will.
AppV. So tell us, for people who don't know, like, not saying I don't know, but I kind of know. What's AppV?
Well, think of AppV as being like some of our other Dash Vs. For example, if you're familiar with Hyper-V, Hyper-V is a server or machine virtualization where you take all of the assets and put it into one huge file, a virtual hard disk file, and then you have some XML metadata that governs the behavior of the machine.
Right.
Well, with AppV, we have all of the assets for the application, files, registry settings, configuration settings. That's placed into a single ball of goo, basically, but it's a file. It's an AppV file. And then we also have XML metadata that governs the behavior of the application. So we're taking an application and we're freezing it in its installed state, putting it in a bubble, and basically allowing one-click style deployment that's isolated from other applications as well. So you avoid DLL regardless of how the application was actually developed, because we still have a lot of applications out there that don't take advantage of side-by-side like they should, writing applications that may be using APIs from the last century. And AppV is a way to allow these applications to run safely within its own environment.
So you avoid a lot of the application compatibility problems.
Well, we don't look at AppV as an application to OS compatibility solution, because we actually isolate and hook at the user mode level. And we therefore we allow OS integration, and we have a series of things called extension points, like shortcuts, FTAs. We have various options for communicating with the operating system via COM. If we need to make COM calls to, for example, to like an email program, all of that allows AppV to not be totally isolated to where it can actually locally interact with some applications as need be, and we can fine tune that. But it's not a guaranteed solution for application to OS compatibility. A lot of times you get lucky because of the way we isolate the assets. But most of the time, app compatibility issues often fall into app-to-app compatibility issues. Like, the biggest use case for AppV is Java. You have a company that has like five different applications. Each require a specific version of Java. Well, it allows you to actually be able to run all those applications at the same time on the same machine.
Without having to worry about which version of Java is compatible with which app.
Exactly.
Okay, great. And you have some things to show us about troubleshooting AppV.
Well, I'm a big fan of the sysinternals tools, and I'm sure you've talked about the sysinternals tools
all the time.
And you may be wondering, why would an AppV guy be coming here to talk about troubleshooting? Well, primarily because we rely heavily on reverse engineering. Whether you're supporting it as an engineer, as a premier field engineer, or if you're working with packaging at a customer's location where the customer has a contract signed, for example, with MCS or through our global delivery factory to virtualize 800 applications, 1,000 applications, and you virtualize using what we call the AppV sequencer, which is kind of our virtualizer. It is a tool that kind of monitors the installation and then actually collects all of the assets. Well, sometimes we may have problems sequencing where it didn't capture everything properly, or sometimes there may be an issue with a particular subsystem that the application needs that the application cannot use because AppV will not allow you to quote-unquote sandbox it. For example, you have an application that depends on a driver, for example. Well, drivers are kernel mode objects, and we can't actually sandbox something at the kernel level.
Kind of the design of the kernel. Everybody lives in the same space.
Exactly. So drivers themselves cannot be sandboxed within an AppV bubble. However, you can deploy the driver locally and the virtual application can interact with the driver. But how do you know that's what's going on? Well, a lot of times you don't know until after you've tried to sequence an application and you find it's malfunctioning, so you have to do a lot of troubleshooting. And we use the sysinternals tools to troubleshoot, and they've been a lifesaver in many cases.
What kind of tools do you tend to use for those kinds of situations?
Number one tool, process monitor, of course.
Of course.
But I'll use tools like ListDLLs to find out if the AppV virtualization hook DLL has been properly injected into the process. Mm-hmm. Process Explorer is a good way to use it. I use strings to look for errors and so I can isolate, you know, if you have an application that has lots of executables and you want to know what executable to hone in procmon, I can use strings to locate an error that I've received from the application. And if I find the string within a particular executable, it helps me focus a little bit more on that executable in procmon, because procmon captures everything. I mean, you got to go through a lot of noise.
Yeah, for sure. So your procmon example would be like during your sequencing, you capture that? Is that kind of what you're getting at?
What I would normally do is first isolate the problem to, was this a problem that happened during sequencing or during virtualization?
Okay.
Because sequencing is an intensive process because you're monitoring and you're doing a lot of copy on writes. You want to avoid having to do a procmon trace during sequencing unless you know for a fact the problem occurred during sequencing.
Sure, so. Okay. So the procmon then, I see what you're getting at then. You use the procmon more as when you see the problem in the app to troubleshoot what's happening there, and then you can go back and see, oh, well, maybe something wasn't sequenced correctly or there's some other issue that we need to address.
Correct.
Gotcha. Okay.
We use a lot of advanced NTFS features as well in AppV. For example, we have a feature called the Shared Content Store, where the applications are not only virtualized, but the assets never come completely to disk. So we create a series of sparse files, and only things like the primary executable and the PE header are ever actually resident on the disk. Everything else is what we call stream to memory. We use a lot of junction points for integration because we have different versions of apps that may come down, and we need to, when we stream down the primary version, if there's an update to that package, instead of streaming the entire application down, again, we only want to bring down the differentials. But we also want to make sure that versioning remains consistent, but the end user's shortcuts and extension points remain the same, so we rely on junction points. So I've had to use Junction before to recreate junction points and to do a little troubleshooting at that aspect as well.
Right. So a lot of different sysinternals tools, and we've certainly done some episodes before on some different tools, and people can go back and take a look at those. But give me maybe an example of a case where you, do you have a good example where you were able to use something like procmon, for example, and to find a problem?
For example here, let me bring up. So let me pull up Notepad++. Here's a issue with Notepad++ running virtualized. And
cannot load the dynamic library. Scintilla error. I don't know what Scintilla is. Must be a Notepad++.
I don't know what it is either. Exactly. Exactly. That's what's great. So I can actually go to my sysinternals folder, run Process Explorer. And in looking at Notepad++, you're going to notice that this is actually not launching from a regular location. It's launching from what we call the immutable package root. Now, the package root launches through an actual junction point because the junction point goes to the package GUID, but it's actually stored in a package GUID with the subsequent version GUID. So every time we update the package, we update that junction point. So we know this is virtualized. Another way we could tell if it was virtualized was to run the list DLLs and look for the AppV, we call it AppV int subsystems 32 DLL. But okay, so we know it's virtualized. How do we know what else is happening with this application? Sure. Well, one of the first steps I always do is I de-virtualize. The sequencer virtualizes, but the sequencer also devirtualizes.
Okay.
Which means it takes an ATV package and it lays it down natively on the local system.
Okay.
So when I have a suspicious package, and this one is obviously suspicious, we didn't get that very far with it, I'll take that package over to the sequencer. I'm going to launch the ATV sequencer. And the sequencer, since it's a packaging utility, is designed to run on a standalone system mm-hmm. that you actually just revert, because we want to keep our sequencers clean. Because if you don't have a clean sequencer, if you've taken that application and installed it and uninstalled it and installed it and uninstalled it, assets are going to remain and you have what we call a dirty sequencer. Mm. And that's what I'm suspecting here. I'm suspecting that this is not a virtualization problem, it's a sequencing problem, and not everything was actually captured. So I'm going to go to the Tools menu, I'm going to select Expand Package to Local System,
okay,
and I'm going to load up the package. Just so I could identify it properly, I marked it as a bad package. So now it's devirtualizing.
So it's installing it to your local
Yes,
file
it's
system.
Using strictly the assets that are in the ATV file.
Okay.
Now, if I expand this package and Notepad runs as expected, then the problem didn't occur during sequencing. The problem actually is something to do with virtualization.
Makes sense.
I might need to go into the dynamic XML configuration of the application, the metadata, and make an adjustment. For example, I may need to disable kernel object virtualization, or I may need to disable COM virtualization and make COM integrated. Mm. We spoof, to quote unquote virtualize,
yeah.
we will spoof COM GUIDs, we will munge up the names of the objects, so the operating system has no idea, or other applications have no idea what they are, but the virtualization handlers know exactly what they are, and they'll correct and translate it back to the application.
Okay.
So now I've devirtualized this, and I'm going to run Notepad, and lo and behold.
Same problem.
It's the same problem. Now, I would use the strings utility to actually hone in on what's actually going wrong here.
Okay.
If, for example, I have an application that has several executables and I want to verify what executable this came from, I would go into the command prompt. And then I would actually run against the actual application. Now, because I've devirtualized this, the actual application is in its normal location underneath program files. So I would run strings dash O against Notepad plus plus and pipe that to find string slash I, and the error message was contained scintilla.
Scintilla.
So scintilla sounds like a good.
Seems unique.
Oh, well, obviously I would want to. This is a VM and I forgot to put sysinternals in my path. Bad Steve.
I always have sysinternals in your path. Okay.
And there it is, right.
Where's
there.
The
scintilla
error
cannot load the dynamic library. So we're on the right track. Mm-hmm. And where to go next? Procmon. Procmon is the logical place to go at this point.
Try to understand why that error might be coming up. It certainly sounds like, you know, obviously based on the error message text, a problem reading some DLL, but we don't know what DLL.
Right.
Right.
Something is missing from this actual package.
Sure, yeah.
So run procmon. Oops, it would help if I had the correct. Oh,
that's why
we can edit this out, right?
I think everybody watching has had that kind of experience.
Verify that I. All right, so I'm going to start. Make sure close that out. I'm going to capture the event. Go back, launch Notepad. Stop the capture. Notice I'm not closing out of Notepad because I don't want to capture a whole bunch of shutdown elements.
Extraneous.
I want to go right to the end there and...
I always try to keep those procmon traces as short as possible.
Yep. Now, what's great about this is I already know it's in Notepad++, so I can easily just go right to that particular process. Mm-hmm. Now, I can run this in the bubble because all you have to do is run procmon once to inject the driver, and then because of the design of App v5 where we actually use NTFS and the real registry, we just state separate. It allows procmon to easily trace what's going on, but since we isolated this to a sequencing problem, then there's no reason for me to run procmon in the bubble because we missed something during sequencing.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, at the end, I'll exclude a lot of the successes at first, and
see a lot of registry stuff.
You see a lot of missing elements, but
yeah.
Big thing is you start seeing missing DLLs.
Name not found.
Now, of course, obviously, name not found or path not found, you will obviously want to verify that there's not a subsequent success because of the
mm-hmm.
searching.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But one thing, just for the sake of time, path contains. In this particular scenario, you go back and you look and you find that the updater was missing. And you can go verify that.
Updater. Not there.
Indeed.
Yeah.
So the person who sequenced this
mm-hmm.
either excluded by adding an exclusion variable the path to the updater, which is actually common practice.
Okay.
Because we have steady states.
Right. Well, that makes sense. Yeah, you don't want those updating on their own necessarily.
But they didn't turn off the options of updating. So in Notepad++ opened up, it was checking for a newer version. A lot of times if you've used a lot of these applications, they'll tell you a new version is available, would you like to update?
Mm-hmm.
But when you're removing a service or if you're removing files or directories that contain that, but the application is actually configured within the preferences of the application to look for it, it can cause problems. So it's important when you're sequencing that while it's considered a good practice not to have the update components running,
sure.
You want to make sure it's properly configured through a registry setting or configuration file not to check for those updates. And not all applications will allow you to do that sometimes.
So what's happening here was they had disabled the updater, or they'd excluded the updater from the package, but then they left the updater running in the app.
Right. They left they still had it configured.
Configured to check for updates.
Correct.
Which was failing.
And so when you're actually sequencing or virtualizing an application, part of the process involves you actually going in and doing those first run tasks and getting the application configured exactly the way you want it for the end user.
Gotcha. Very cool, very cool. So we've seen a lot of usage of a couple of different sysinternals tools here, actually, because strings and procmon. So it's the same kind of tools we use for troubleshooting just any other issue, but it's just a little bit different of a different scenario, a different environment.
And if it's a Microsoft app, I just go right to WinDBG.
Our old friend WinDBG. Great. Well, thanks for coming on the show, Steve, showing us a little AppV goodness.
Thank you.
And as always, if you have questions or comments, email them to us, defragtools@microsoft.com, or put them in the show notes down there. And we'll see you next week. Thanks for watching.